Good evening, everyone. Happy quarantine.
Okay. Welcome to Get the Fork Out, everyone. This week we have Ed Dunnett, one of my dear friends, ex-Yachty, used to be in the game, left the game for another brand new game that is basically just onshore sellers. He is a wine provisioner, and he does all kinds of cool stuff within that space to help crew, maybe with investments, with wine storage, but we will get all of that. Ed Dunnett, welcome to Get the Fork Out. How you doing, man?
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I'm really well. Thanks for having me on. I've been watching your last ones, and we've been trying to do this for a while, actually, so I'm glad we've got to it.
It's always a struggle.
Sadly, both busy.
Yes, both very busy.
Yeah.
It's not always my fault, but it's mostly my fault because I'm constantly moving. And now
to do it when you were in on a different time zone as well and trying to figure out when we could share a glass of wine together. With a 10-hour difference, and we're not as young as we used to be when drinking 24 hours a day was whatever.
Yeah. If I have a glass of wine at 9 a.m., I don't know what that day looks like now. You know, I don't know what that morphs into. Yeah, that. So when I was in California, I was trying to do these interviews via Zoom on incoming. Yeah, just leave it here. Yeah, just leave a pile. Anyway.
Is it your dirty laundry again? The girls have folded it.
The crew platters are back. So recording on the West Coast was very hard. It's a 10-hour difference, and just coordinating times is absolutely brutal. I'm glad it's over. I am in Croatia. Ed, where are you? Talk to us.
We're I'm in Antibes, actually, just outside.
Nice.
Yeah, just we've got. This is my new warehouse. I've got a big computer, so I won't sort of try and swing it around. And it's pretty.
Could you?
It's not messy.
Could you try
it's messy.
Could you? Yeah,
I'll have a quick quick scan. You can see how heavy this is.
Oh, the trap. We're
sort of mid beginning of the season and kind of mid sort of getting everything in here and together because we've moved. We had a shop in Antibes and. Last year, sort of proved retail was fairly buggered, so we've moved to a bigger space, and I've got some new staff, and new things are happening, and yeah, it's exciting, and it's certainly easier for me, I think, being here rather than trying to land stuff in a tiny little shop and essentially operate what should be a warehouse business out of a pedestrian zone in Antibes was testing.
Well, that was actually one of my questions, how COVID affected you. And for those who don't know, Onshore Cellars, the name of Ed's business, had this amazing boutique wine shop in the heart of this walled, castled medieval city in the south of France. It was an epic shop. So then COVID happened, and like you just said, Ed, it just dried up retail. Yeah. So is that shop no longer?
We've let the shop go. I think last year, not I think, we did 10% in the retail, what we'd done the year before. So revenue was lower than rent. So it was a bit of a no brainer to leave. Yeah, it was sad. I put a lot of work into,
I know you did.
I thought was a really epic store. It was kind of an old, 400-year-old, place in the center of an old town in France. But we eventually grew out of it. So, COVID had a huge effect on us, I think, like everyone.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it was a fairly sharp impact as well. We lost a huge amount of quotes and orders were lost within a week. And so what we were looking at was we'd stocked up and got ready for the season. And, you know, pre-season, we probably put 150 grand into sort of quick moving stock and bits like that, and we pre-ordered things that would be difficult to get for the summer. So when that all sort of dropped off, we had to try and think of ways to diversify, and not having the retail outlet that no one was allowed in. We've done a lot to sort of try and weather that storm, but thankfully we've got lots of our bigger clients have just been going. It's been useful to have some fairly loyal clients, and the ability to ship anywhere means that actually it didn't make in the end, it didn't make a huge difference. But at the beginning, it was, it was pretty scary. I think, certainly business wise and obviously health wise and worried about everyone else as well. But
right.
At the beginning, it was fairly worrying.
No, I think it's been interesting to watch friends and family do massive pivots during this time where, it's quite aggressive and I wouldn't wish it on any of us, but you've seen some really remarkable outcomes. I think it's been quite cool.
Yeah,
I'm allowed to say that to watch people morph into something.
For us,
probably a little bit more streamlined. Oh, I knew you'd be interrupting.
Yeah, for us, but if anyone else is watching, I do have a habit of interrupting Brendan just on purpose by accident. So
it's like a tick, really. Usually it's with a pun.
Yeah, it's been, as shit as it's been really useful exercise. We have done a load on the business in terms of our processes, our inventory system, and then diversifying. And we found new clients outside of yachting, so we're not so reliant on one specific industry. And
that's
at the end of the day, we sell wine. So, everyone drinks, and we notice a huge uptick online in the sense of people just drinking more at home and not getting into restaurants. So they're spending more at home on different wines. And so out of every disaster, there is normally an opportunity. But it's been, it's been a lot of work from all the team and everyone here sort of just trying to work under fairly strained conditions. I'm glad we appear to be, I don't know if they're on the other side of it, but we appear to be closer, at least.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, completely. And more streamlined for a future without retail. But hopefully that's not the case.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know yet.
Well, I mean, everyone's buying everything online. And I think once you realize how easy it is, it's hard to go back. And for me, I used to buy wine online before starting Onshore Cellars, and it's more of a case of that it would just be at my door. I don't need to drag it around the supermarket, and I can find exactly what I want, and I don't have to drink stuff that's only sold in supermarkets because I'm too lazy to go to a great store like Onshore Cellars.
Right. Plus, you can avoid the judgmental stares of the checkout clerk. Why are you judging me? Just let me buy my wine.
Well, I've got a couple of friends around here. I'll name him because I do want to shame him. Chris Irish, who has to buy stuff. He buys through us, then he buys in the supermarket, and he buys somewhere else because he's too embarrassed to buy the whole lot from one place. The amount he drinks.
Right. No, I get it. Yes. Spread it around. So no judgmental stares from a checkout clerk, please. No.
Yeah, exactly. So how's life with you, Brendan? How's this new thing you're how is this Get the Fork Out going? I've been watching it fairly regularly.
It's going well. I feel like it's fun to do. So I try not to look at the numbers because it's not why I do it, but I end up learning so much stuff from you guys, and I love doing it. And unfortunate thing is it takes a bit of time to organize, with other people that are in different time zones, have Wi-Fi. I spend so much time looking for goddamn Wi-Fi. Like it's probably what I do more than interview is like, I'm going around with my phone, literally like with speedtest.net. If anyone wants to figure out how fast your Wi-Fi is, speedtest.net. And you go around and you're like, okay, this is good. I got 22 megabyte upload or 22 megabyte download. It's like, oh man, I was in a campground in California. Just like, oh man, I wish I had a film of that. Just me looking for Wi-Fi. I do it more than interviews, like I said. But it's going well. Like I really like it. It's trying to find the time. I'm on a vessel that will allow me to keep doing them. So it's once a week. But it's a struggle, man. It's not easy to find the time.
I mean, I ask because we've started doing more stuff on YouTube and other sort of social media things and a different outlook to marketing because obviously there's no boat shows at the moment. It's difficult to go and do, or certainly last year was difficult to dot walk. So you've still got to get, and we used to do a lot of events at the shop and I ask because it's a lot of work trying to diversify into doing online media. So videos, interviews and podcast. And it is, there's a lot of work involved and it's fairly relentless and it takes seemingly a long time to sort of build something up. So Yeah, it's nice to watch what you're doing and see how it's building and how we can learn from you. I guess we're learning from you as well. And
we're learning from each other. I like the word relentless. Get content out. You get like a bit reprieve of after you do one, and then you should be actually filming the next one and getting ready. And it's like, it always feels like a last second thing. And then obviously, you know, it gets uploaded first to Yachting International Radio, and then I post it a week or two later. So it's, I'm going to get some help, I think. My internet connection is unstable. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, I think I'm getting some help. I got this guy, a friend of a friend, who's going to help me with the editing, because hopefully doing some more quarantine kitchen type stuff. So as much as I said it's relentless, I'm about to add to it. So we'll see how that goes. But just to get someone to help.
Well, it's consistency, I think, as well. You need to be doing it every week and no matter what, without fail. You're like,
no matter what,
I know what your lifestyle's like, having been on a boat. It's just there's so many things that can come up that take you away from what you plan to do, just in work, let alone when you start getting out with the crew and drinking.
I have this analogy, it's like with other chefs, that you're always in the shit as a yacht chef. Like, it's not like a restaurant chef where you're like, oh, I come in, you know, I prep myself up the day before, I should be good going in today. It's like, even when you're completely prepared, you're always kind of in the shit because you do not know what can happen. The weather could kick up, you know, so three guests could show up. Like, all these things can just, the variables are insane, as you already know. So we'll see how it goes, but you know, never let the job suffer. That's the most important part. But if I can find the time, I'll do it. If I can't do it. Got to pay the bills, man.
Yeah. It's also an interesting, for me, it's certainly a new area for me. It's interesting. It's interesting to see how people to consume information, where they get it from, what they're listening to. And, you know, it's trying to understand it as well when you, I'm not necessarily a huge user of social media or YouTube or any of the other sort of platforms. So it's, for me, it's even bigger learning curve, not really understanding why people watch these things anyway. But I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts. It's probably just showing my age rather than anything.
No, I don't think
but you're right. Anything comes up. Things just come up all the time.
Yeah, I got to bring up my lighting. So I'm using a camera that's international, but if I have the lighting on in the galley, it flickers like crazy. So that's why it looks like there's a flashlight on me. I'm just looking at myself now. I look like ridiculous, but that's fine. Like, and I'm using this little like, because there'll be this like crazy ass flicker if I just leave the lights on. Ed, excuse me. Why don't you talk about some of the investment opportunities that you used to do, or I don't know, do you still do those sort of things for crew? In wine?
Most of them are more for sort of, originally when we set up the business, I had an idea, which was we started this with relatively very little money. And so I was looking at exploring options into how to create a stock business without having to finance it myself. So I was looking at investments for crew. So if crew buy wine, as it's released as an investment with a potentially looking to sell it in 5 years or 10 years or drink it for themselves. The idea was to create a stock for myself. I could then call on the crew, and then I have rather than just offering to sell them the wine, and I have an actual offer, you know, in 3 or 4 or 5 years time, we have a route to market for you, and we can sell it direct to boats, and it's an easier way to cash out. And typically if you're investing wine in London, they take a percentage at the beginning, a percentage at the end, they charge you for storage fees. And the reality is you probably wouldn't walk away with much, but that's a whole nother business in itself. So I did a few bits. I've done some stuff with you and some other friends. And more recently I've put together a group of us to buy a Cask Macallan, which is quite cool, I think.
Oh yeah. You're so pushing that. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I've got I won't say how much it is, but it's in the hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, it's absurd. Yeah.
Quite a few hundred thousand, and it's a 23-year-old Carson Macallan, And again, the view is it's actually just a group of friends and some clients and some of their friends actually, and it's just a casual casual investment of
casual.
Oh, hopefully we'll be able to we'll sell it. 24 years old now, so the view is to try and sell it at 30 years, and in theory, if I'm right, we'll make a reasonable return. But like all right. of these things, it's an investment, it's speculation. What I quickly discovered is I don't want to start selling things to crew and then realize that, or not realize, and then the market changes and then you're the guy who's taking the shit about their investment going down. Stick to the core of what we sort of started with. And Jess and I, my wife and I, who started this, we were on yachts for, it was 8 years, and Jess was a little longer. She stayed on to pay for some of this. And we just thought we'd create something that was kind of crew helping crew. So that was the original concept. And Onshore Sellers was the name, in the sense that you had your sellers ashore and that you could keep your wine here rather than ruining it on the yachts. And we just organized all the logistics for the owner's house and yacht and everything from one singular place. And you just carry what you need around rather than, you know, €4 million of wine on a boat for 3 years. It's not going to age it very well. So that was the concept. And obviously once you start a business, your ideals or what you want to achieve is effectively tempered by compromises and reality of finances, etc. So yeah, it's been a long old slog. Yeah. I think we've done what we aimed to do, which is set up. Let me print one second, Brendan. I'm just going to pass this over to
This is going to be a live phone call. Watch everyone as he passes on the responsibility to someone else. Let's see how long it takes. That was fast.
Sorry, I've got.
Well, that was fast.
Doing nothing. No. I passed it over. Thankfully, we've got staff now.
I was narrating. I was just wondering how long it would take for you to pass the responsibility over.
I'm pretty good at passing the buck.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. What was your time? Tell us a little bit about your time in yachting and like what boats, where'd you go?
Gosh. So I came down here, one thing led to another, and I ended up doing 5 years living up in Val d'Isère, sort of originally going to be 6 months, and I ended up there sort of summers and winters for 5 years, and thought,
nice place,
at some point I need to get back to reality. So I thought I'd take the summer off and help a couple of mates out who were captains on boats who'd worked the winters up in the Alps and come captain in the summer. And so I had day work for the summer, so I came down here to bum around effectively and enjoy the sun and the beach, and fell into yachting. I wasn't going to take a full-time job. I wasn't looking for a full-time job, but I got offered a job in Doha in Qatar, and just thought it's an opportunity to go and live somewhere where I don't think I'll ever have an opportunity, or in a region where I've never thought I'd live, and an experience that actually I never thought I would have. So I took it. I think instantly we regretted it, actually, probably within the first hour of being off the plane.
Because of the sand? Was the sand the issue?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Maybe I hadn't given it enough thought. It's quite a culture shock, but I'm glad I did it. I enjoyed it. I was there for 8 years.
That's a good experience. Definitely.
Yeah, one second.
So we have, it's 1:29. Counting down.
Yeah.
Oh, that was even faster. That was only 3 seconds. Oh,
there's a delivery, but I've closed the big shutter.
Just lock him out. No more delivery.
I'm trying to minimize disturbances today. I'm glad I did it. It was fun. It was an eye opener. I learned a lot about, I think, people in general, in the sense that you have these preconceptions of different cultures and places, and in reality I think people are wholly the same in every country. There's a certain level of people you like, there's a certain level of people you never like, and there's the rest of the arseholes.
Yeah,
it was good. I did enjoy it.
I believe it's the same ratio of assholes across the board. As much as we like to single out groups
of
people,
it definitely is.
Yeah, like, no, they're assholes. It's like, no, I mean, this is a little thing I cooked up on the motorcycle trip. Is like, just everyone has 99.9% of people are good. Everyone wants to be loved and to love and to be loved. And everyone has these families that they want to take care of. Therefore, at the core of it, we're identical. We're completely identical. There's no way inside those parameters that you're allowed to be assholes, unless, one caveat, you're either thirsty or you're hungry. And I don't mean like hangry. I mean, my baby's starving. Yeah, yeah. Then you tend to do things a little more violent. You get a little more aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, social context plays a big role in how you are, in the sense of if you need to eat, what would you do to eat?
Right.
Especially if you need your family to eat. So then, yeah. But yeah, as a rule, without getting too deep, neither of us are psychologists, but we've spent a lot of time drinking, so we understand everything.
Pontificating. I believe it's called pontificating.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cool world out there, though. Like, and it's so much safer than you realize once you understand that everyone is innately good. You need to be aware of
yourself. Most people are there to help, and that most people,
exactly, yeah,
and they want the experience. You know, you're going out to different, like, as you're traveling around the world, you're going for an experience, and the experience is there for you, but also the people you meet. The experience of meeting some weird American chef who's traveling the world on a bike,
if I had a superpower, I would love to be able to speak every single language in the world, because the capacity for adventure in another language, in another country, is so much higher. Like, you would just get abducted in the best way into the coolest adventures on the planet if you could speak every language. That's what I would want, because you just stumble around, you do the touristy stuff, and it's fun.
But it's also understanding the cultural differences, don't you? If you understand the language, you understand the background of the culture. You know, I've lived in France, and I still find the culture in France actually quite strange. Well, it shouldn't appear to be too different. We should be English and French. You'd think they're fairly similar, but the core social culture of France is difficult to understand. But I think if you understand the education system, you understand the language, you understand why people have a different approach to things that you think are so logical another way. But it's all these subtle differences that makes people different. Yeah, but at the core of them are the same.
Gaining perspective.
It's getting deep, Brennan. This is getting deep.
It's good. Yeah. Get the fork out, man. Let's get it out.
It's all about,
What about, so you've made this massive pivot from retail to warehouse. And like, I think you had a really good point too about how you're basically trying to do a warehouse business out of a shop. And then once you realize that, probably because of COVID, let's get a warehouse and ditch the retail.
Yeah. I mean, the goal last year was to have a warehouse in addition to the shop. And just because we were year four of a 6 year rolling lease anyway, we effectively had another 2 years that we'd have to pay for. So thankfully with COVID that helped us negotiate out of it. However, without COVID, we would have taken a warehouse in addition to the shop. And the shop is really cool. It was set up effectively for a showroom. So you pull into one team, you can bring your crew. We used to do loads of events with the whole interior team or the whole yacht, or even the owners would come in. We do private tastings and we do stuff for the locals as well. And we'd have, all sorts of fun events going on. And that was, I think, two or three, we took the shop, and that sort of completed what we were trying to do, which was be somewhere where the crew can come and hang out. And
maybe
the crew, that was kind of our motto, I guess, crew helping crew for a long time. I think it still is.
Mantra.
You know, we understand it from both sides, and it's difficult from both sides, and you kind of understand why people are being so pedantic about the size of a Perrier bottle or so pedantic
it's so
about
true.
The opening on
it's so true. It's gonna fit in the fridge. If it doesn't fit in the fridge, I'm
without having without having lived it.
Yeah,
if you haven't lived the other side of understanding why your owner's wife just wants the sports cap Evian 32 centiliters that are only made in Estonia shipped in just for her trip, you're like, this is mental. But
yeah,
so we understand why it's so right, so important, I guess, to get it right, because ultimately it comes as on their head and they have to deal with potentially someone who's less than happy about it, who doesn't see the funny side of drinking out the wrong size Evian bottle.
It's not humorous. What does your season look like?
Yeah.
Like, are you seeing comparable numbers?
No,
coming
it's not. But I mean, orders?
I just jumped right.
Yeah, this last month. I mean, this last month I've. Since COVID, I've decided rather than contract and try and make everything smaller, I've expanded.
Contract COVID.
Counterintuitive. And I looked at it as, we contracted certainly in our revenue last year, but I've spent more money this year with a view that while everyone else is suffering the same as us, likely, it's a good opportunity to come guns blazing. And, with the right support, knowing that we're going to need more people to do things because everything takes longer and it's more difficult. And so make sure we're fully crewed and ready. And last month was testament to, I think, our preparedness. We had our best month, certainly for over a year. Our best, it was an amazing month. And I think looking forward, it's hard to get overexcited having seen stuff change so rapidly last year.
Yeah.
I think it's looking like a good summer. But you know what can happen is we've got charters booked this year. I'm hesitant to get excited until we've delivered, because last year we had charter orders booked and we were ready to cancel. And in the end, you just, I think this summer's, we all hope, I think we'll see end of June once they open up some more restrictions in France and Italy and Spain and lots of boats. I think you're in Croatia now, no?
Yeah, we have a 10-week charter starting in a couple of days. So it's our season is going to be good, but we were just the kind of the lucky ones that would book these clients that have been booking boats for, over a year to stay away from COVID. So it's good to have, but I can't use our charter bookings as a barometer of whether or not the season's going to pick up or the season's going to go back to normal. But I hear what you're saying about we're all missing that foundation of stability that we used to have, where it's like, I think it's going to be good.
Yep.
It feels good now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in a week it could be all gone. Sucks.
I think you're seeing it with people not spending their savings and saving more. Well, the fact that you can't go out anyway, but I have it. For us, I'm just a little bit more cautious this year than actually last year as well. But you know, you just, it'd be great to think it's going to be a nice long summer, but anything can, as we've proven. But I'm quietly confident. To create a really long answer to a simple question.
I have never heard the term quietly confident put towards you ever before. Boisterously confident, loudly confident.
We'll see.
That's usually Ed's kind of MO.
Yeah, we'll see. Certainly the charter bookings we're seeing, like yours, are longer. I think people, if they're going to commit to going away, why not go away for 2 months? And we've all proven we can work from wherever. So if you've got a boat with decent internet, it doesn't really matter where you are anymore. It's a lot of remote working, everything, all the shopping and stuff can be done online. And why not go and have a chef cook for you every day and people pamper you? And if you've got the money, let's spend it.
Yeah, I think that has been a truth too. I think there's a delay on this call. So if it sounds like I'm interrupting you, I'm not. It's just a delay. Although sometimes I do need to interrupt you because, you know why. But there's there's a way, does this go forward, these long ass charters? That's the thing. And I do, I mean, I guess it just depends on COVID and how the vaccines work or not. We'll see.
I guess so. I think, I don't know. Time will tell.
Yeah.
Time will tell. let's all hope that everyone at least has a busy enough summer. I mean, us and everyone else in the yachting market are just, for those who struggled last year, I know there's a lot of people who need to do a reasonable amount of business this year just to stay alive. And those who did take loans and stuff, at some point they will have to be paid back. And so, there's a mounting debt burden on, I'd imagine, on a lot of companies and suppliers.
We're
lucky in twofold that we sell wine and everyone drinks wine. Secondly, we work with yachts and fairly high net worth individuals around the world and actually normal people. So we've got, from what I can see, some have got richer, and there's a lot of new, very rich people.
Yeah.
So I think we're fairly lucky in a lot of senses that our own or your owners and the charterers are still spending lots of money, and yacht crew are still employed, and most yachts are still to some degree working and busy.
I was in yachting during the this will come back to your point we just said in a second, but like I was in yachting when the global financial crisis happened, and the same thing. I watched other people get their boats chained to the dock, basically in collections, and then I watched other people just buy that same boat as their second boat or a bigger boat. Like I think the rich can pivot quickly and earn massively in times like this. I think it was Winston Churchill that said, like, the time to buy is when there's blood on the streets or something like that. But I think we're seeing some of that now, and I'm seeing it for the second time because I've been in it so long. And I think what you said was true, is like you have this access to this industry where kind of, you know, no matter what, yachting is going to be running, and you are now, as certain countries close up, you can just be sending, because the yachts will go to the countries that are open, and you can still get them their wine and sell them their wine. And I think you're in a much better place now than shopping on Teeb, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, effectively the core of what we do, I think like the other week with Dennis touched on it, effectively we're a logistics company. You know,
exactly.
We don't make, like the food provisioners, we don't grow our own grapes and make our own wine. So we don't have a unique individual product. What we're offering is a service. So we're a service-driven and logistics company. And for yachts, it's the important part is the logistics. It's if you miss the delivery, the charter gets missed as wine. And the service is making sure that you're getting a fair and competitive price and responsive and easy to deal with and everything else. But all we do is move wine around the world. So to pivot that from yachts actually to go into consumers and to go into like high net worth individuals around the world was a fairly easy move, because we'd mastered the hard part of the logistics. The rest was just most normal people. We can, you know, we've got their wine in a box that morning that they've ordered, and it's shipped and it's done and it's out of my hair. It's a lot easier than a yacht. It's an easy pivot.
I do think there's a bit of cachet, a bit of street credibility too, with the kind of the businesses that deal with yachts, you know, because I do think that's the yachting is the upper echelon of high net worth individuals and the rich of the rich. And I think if you are in a business with a yacht, that gives you a bit of I think it gives you guys a bit of a leg up on the competition.
It's a bit of credence. I think what we I mean, so where we saw the opportunity to even start this is we were using, back to your point, what boat I was on, but I was on Motor Yacht Scat for four and a half years. And we were buying wine from probably the longest established wine merchant in yachting. And actually, Jess and I just started investing in wine personally with a view to having a cellar. So we were speaking to our guys in London and buying wine, and we were looking at what we were buying for the yacht and effectively seeing it was more than outrageous in terms of the margins were double of what it's worth. So you're looking at the 50 grand order and going, we've actually got 25 grand's worth of wine. There's not 25 grand worth of service, which made us realize, well, maybe we should go and do this. But then when you get into it, the reality is you have to offer a fair and competitive price. I mean, you do get like the working with yachts, I guess you have the certain stereotype view of the brand is that people think that you're expensive, or people think that it's a good service because you must be good if you're working with the yachts. Reality is we offer the same prices to people on the street, retail prices and normal,
yeah.
I think, fairly yeah. fair pricing. Rather than, and that's why we're able to put our wines online without too much hassle, in the sense that we're already market rate. Whereas I think a lot of other yachting companies find it difficult to take their pricing and sell that to a consumer where he's
right.
he doesn't have €1 million or €1 billion right. to waste.
Yeah, so you can clearly look it up and be like, that's twice the price of what it should be. I'm not using that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's a value to the service and what we do as well. And
yeah.
Yeah. So, touching on what Dennis said is, I think the other week, is we are literally just logistics thing. And you saying is you've run out of time in the day because we're constantly fighting fires and making plans when.
Yeah,
a specific wine hasn't shown up and we've got 24 yeah. hours of delivery, right? Where are we going to find that from? And so a lot of the costs at the for yachting tends to be the logistics side of that. They want it yeah. so quickly that the cost goes up because we have to fly a single bottle from somewhere, which is going to cost €60 for one bottle, but it's only a €40 bottle of wine. So all of a sudden right. you're like, but then you won that wine, that's what they pay. And
you lose one person out of your staff just trying to find that bottle for a whole day.
Ah, plus
amount of cost to get the logistics to get it sent. Like, and I want to yeah. explain to people as well. Like, for me as a chef, it's similar as a chief stew to just to order wine. Like, I send an email, a spreadsheet of what I want, and then someone else deals with all of that. Like, they just find all of it from dry stores, dairy, yeah. fruit, veg, fish, meat, you name it, from whatever country they find it. If I had to do that on my own, there's no way I would have the time to do that or even come yeah. close to getting the amount of quality, quantity, say Croatia, forget it. It's not possible. There's nothing wrong with Croatia, but they don't have the market to just be holding on to that stuff in this country in the first place. So to get to my point is like, I type an email, spreadsheet, I hit send, the shit just shows up in 3 to 5 days.
That's what you need,
that's
isn't it?
Service.
You
want. You, so when we talk so about service, that's what you guys yeah. are doing for us.
You want to have peace of mind that when you press that send button, you know, even if you haven't heard back right. from your provisioner in a couple of days, you want peace of mind that it's worked on and it's yeah. going to show up. And I don't need to worry. I remember when Jess was chief stew on. She went to Lady Lana was the last one, which is. I think fairly challenging and a lot of ordering to do, but you've got 50 suppliers as a chief stew. You're trying to coordinate fucking lampshades
yeah,
and wine
that's
and
true.
Soft yeah. drinks and this. And
yeah.
you really just want to know that
the,
when
the marble
email
guy,
goes out,
the wood guy.
Yeah, it's all dealt with and you'll get an email back with a few questions once they've actually looked through it all. And here's the questions, answer this, right. Yeah. Action approved, delivered. So yeah, that is the service, but I mean, that's because we're doing such large orders, I guess, to yachts, the value of the service is certainly not 100% increase in the value of the wine.
No,
so,
shouldn't be.
No. So that's all I do is basically order wine and put it on a pallet or a van and it's gone. We rarely get to drink any of the good stuff, sadly.
Yeah, not that Macallan 24. Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah, once it's 30. So with the car coming back to the cast, interestingly, we can just bottle it ourselves. So you can bottle it
legally.
We can bottle it as a Scotch whiskey and it can have Macallan on the label, but it's not bottled at Macallan. But yeah, well, the idea was
sort of
at some point
Scottish lord overseeing the the bottling process. Like
labeling. Oh, it's like all of these things. I guess it's like brie cheese or cheddar cheese. It's all of these different sort of areas of champagne or the Loire or Rhone, and whiskey is the same. They all have a set of rules to protect their brand.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, anyone could make a Scotch whiskey.
Right. Yeah. That's why I'm then, wondering. Yeah, to rebottle it would be, I think, just a nightmare, wouldn't it? Like they have invested interest in protection and like, because what would prevent like someone from just tampering with it? tonight,
so, right, no, we'd bottle it for the idea was to bottle it under the boats, like find a boat or someone who wants their own bottle with their own label. And so you go to the boat, you know, what sometimes they do giveaways. We've got clients who do €500,000 plus a year and bottles of Macallan just to have every day drinking on their boat. So the idea is, why not buy something that's effectively significantly less? And you can put a picture of your boat on, or your wife, or your dog, or whatever you want. Do it as a giveaway.
I lost my life. I thought it was to resell it as a whole cask in 6 years.
Yeah, either or. Effectively, as long as it's sold and we're not sitting on it for 50 years. Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can be financially okay to sit on that investment for 50 years. That'd be cool.
Oh, I'd be long gone.
You're right for what I mean.
I wouldn't be doing this in 50 years, Brandon. Still packing boxes of wine.
Well, I mean, I respect you guys so much for dealing with this stuff, like dealing with COVID, dealing with completely changing your business during this time. Like, it must have been really challenging. So don't look at the future years going forward. If the last year was not an indication of what your life is going to be like going forward, I don't
think. Yeah, no, you know what? Last year we've got a young boy, and we had another baby recently. So it's been
congratulations, it's been man. Busy, yeah. It's awesome. It's so been a plus a pandemic.
I'm glad we're sort of, as bad as it was, it was a really unique opportunity to work on a lot of things that I'd wanted to do for a long time, but hadn't found the time. So to
yoga,
to set up an effective, and yeah, sure,
balancing your shock.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, sadly, it's weird, isn't it? Getting back into, I know you've been traveling around, sort of dodging lockdowns and doing what you can not to be stuck anywhere.
Yes,
the rest of us have had to suffer just with the company of my staff and my wife for a year. So they are presumably fairly fed up with me by now, I would imagine.
Nonsense. No, I much respect. I just had dinner with one of the project managers from Larson that I'm working on a rather large build for a galley design. And so we went out to dinner. I stopped by when I was in Northern Europe, this beautiful old like German town. And he hadn't been to a restaurant in 6 months. He hasn't been out of his house in 6 months. So I have been dodging COVID. I have been dodging lockdown. It's been great. And I've been thanking my lucky stars. I'm as mobile as I am. And as I always have been. But hats off to everyone else that hasn't been. And
we were relatively lucky that I can still get to work and do things, and we had to be at an office. But those who've suffered in small apartments around the world with their, and actually having to look after their own children, heaven forbid. Suddenly realize that you
and
children should be under the charge of someone else.
You should just have fun with the kids and then just. So
you're doing galley. That's right. You're doing this new galley design projects.
Yeah,
that sounds really cool.
Thanks, man. I think there's going to be a couple of interesting podcasts coming up about that.
I can't quite give it away this morning, actually, and I think he might be on the project that you're working on up in Lurs, and the chef in here this morning. It starts in a month or so. We'll talk about it off air.
No, this one's not. I can't drop any sizes, or probably shouldn't even said Larson, but I don't think that's crewing up just yet. But who knows? Don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah, anyway, I think it's a unique space, isn't it? You found something that's not being done. And if it's anything like the deck lockers on a new boat or any of the organization, you look at it and go, who the hell has sort of organized this? And they clearly have never worked on a boat before. So why not have someone who's worked on the boat who understands how these things work? So you're not trying to retrofit things 2 years later and pulling crap out, and you can be more efficient. You can have a better service if the chef isn't pulling his hair out. And
I don't have any hair. It was one of the things just to make sure I don't get slanked. I'm into the galley. What I've noticed is that there's been intelligent people with great educations in yachting. there's very also very intelligent people with great educations in these shipyards, because they're putting out amazing stuff, and I'm learning more and more about the logistics of what it takes to build a boat, and the global logistics of gathering ore, you know, to make metal and to make, it's fascinating stuff. But for whatever reason, those two groups aren't talking anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I noticed. And then, it, like you said, with deck lockers, it's the same with galleys, where like, okay, so whoever made this never cooked. Not the one I'm on now, but never cooked a day in their life. They've never even worked on a boat. Like, so to me, that's disturbing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's such a unique work environment, isn't it?
It's an opportunity. It's not to be improved, but I don't blame them. I just see it as just the way things are run now, and they don't understand what their building was going to be like 20 years down the line. Like, this thing's still going to exist in some form or another. So I just want to try and make them better, just make it easier on the chefs. I'm actually like, I've narrowed it down. Like, I'm actually not doing it for anyone but some chef I've never met to come in a boat and galley's sick or the galley's usable. I mean, everyone's going to complain about something, but some of the GAs I've seen, not necessarily from any of the big yards, but some of the, you know, all yards, some of the original GAs, you're like, whoa, please don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, it would be nice for people to look at it and go, actually, someone's applied a little bit of logical thought rather than looking at it and going, I don't even know how they reached this decision. I can't see the process. Yeah. You're like, how are we here? Yeah.
So at least, like I said before, though, like that,
you can write handover notes for them.
That
and go, well, the reason why this is going to annoy you. But sorry, I'm interrupting you. So I'll just carry on.
Yeah. He's going to go. This is what Ed and I are like personally. Like, he just goes, and then I have to force my way into the conversation. Love you to death, dude. The disconnect is real. And I'm not sure why. There's just like no one talking. I guess that's all I wanted to say. There's like,
I think it's often a lot of industries are similar. And I guess that's what we're all trying to move towards is more communicate, and like with all these, I mean, everything is making better at communication and different tools to help you do different things. And it's an evolution, isn't it? You know, after so many years of suffering, you go, well, there's an opportunity here. And in 5-10 years time, we'll see you as the number one yacht galley designer and his own boat.
Maybe not the boat, but that trip, that's what I was going to say, it was just information gathering, and it's really fascinating to see that side of the industry. Like, I've never been to a shipyard that was capable of building anything over, you know, 60 meters maximum. So now I'm seeing these yards, and it's incredible, man. It's fascinating. I'm really into it. Like, if this is the next part, part of my career, it's an incredible thing. And I don't fault the shipyards. I want to be clear with that. Like, they have enough on their plates. It's incredible. And I don't think, like, people think, oh, they make tons of money. I'm like, oh, I think the margins are kind of just, they're not squeaking by, but they're not exactly like,
double. But there's a lot of risk. You know, there is a huge amount of risk. So one thing goes wrong, and you'd be certain that the contracts are well written, that delays will cause financial hardship. You know, there's penalties even.
Yes, big
penalties. So there's a lot riding on each section, I would imagine. And there's where you think building a super yacht is glamorous, it's really not. It's just a big shipyard. It could be a cruise ship or a super yacht. Yeah. It's totally irrelevant. Yeah.
Yeah. You start those realize that and then you think that, like, and you come in the industry and you start looking up at these big Northern European yards, it's like, oh, I'll get those shipyards, it's going to be like perfect, like it's going to be clinical, and they're a massive improvement over the original ones, but they're still like, it's so cool, it's still like such like blue collar just ship work, you know, it's like, it's awesome.
It's raw, isn't it you forget about how much welding and stuff goes into building the hull and this, and there's a lot goes into every stage. But I can't imagine the margins are phenomenally huge, and there's certainly a huge amount of risk. Yeah, especially with the cost of last year, I would imagine raw materials have gone up significantly.
Yes, and also delivery of raw materials. I was at the shipyard and they were saying, like, just getting aluminum right now is almost impossible. Like, just to to find the trucks, you can't find it, and then also transport to get it.
Yeah,
like nothing has been built.
Transport
for the system is broken.
Transport for us has been certainly the first few months of COVID was just horrendous, and I think the pressure going on to the logistics companies was huge. Then coupled with this stupidity of Brexit in December.
I kind of forgot.
Well, that's what I worry about every day.
I just worry about COVID. It's like that underlying band of tension that goes around the entire planet at the same time. Like that's what worries me about COVID. Is that there's all this buildup and this buildup, and it takes a couple more things, and like boom, we're in some kind of like world catastrophe, world war, or some other bullshit. That's what I don't want.
It's certainly made like people more nationalist in the sense of
closed down,
looking after. Yeah, which is a shame, and it's a shame. You know what, Brexit, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, but it's often right, was a stupid idea, and I can't see how not working together and as a whole, as you know, power and numbers, in my opinion. But I hope that COVID doesn't have a huge effect on these things. But yeah, it does feel like people are becoming more insular and looking out less to doing certain trade, and it's becoming more difficult. But we'll see. Perhaps it's a natural reaction. I'd imagine it's a natural reaction to any sort of pandemic or disease spreading, that you want to protect yours and those around you. So see how it pans out. Yeah.
Well, I like trying to keep these at an hour, and we're at an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
My friend.
All right. Well, I do tend to waffle.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Good,
I'm not entirely sure what we. I'm not entirely sure what we were meant to be talking about, but I feel it was. Yeah, it was fun. Talking with you, Brennan, goes like this. It's just everyone else who has to watch us will go. That, are you sure that was an hour? It felt like four.
Maybe the strict viewers while they watch it. Maybe that'll help it go faster. I don't know.
If any of you three watchers are watching still at this point, goodbye.
Yeah, huge fans. Thank you for watching. Thank you for watching. We're huge fans of them. But thanks a lot for coming on, man. I can't wait to see you someday, somehow. Yeah. Maybe in August. But thanks, Ed. Thanks for coming on. Get the
food. Yeah, there's always a place for you at us. So yeah, cheers, guys. Thanks, guys. Cheers, Brennan. Speak soon.
See you, man. Thank you.